The purpose of Retire with Style is to help you discover the retirement income plan that is right for you. The first step is to discover your retirement income personality. Start by going to risaprofile.com/style and sign up to take the industry's first financial personality tool for retirement planning. We know we're a bit different when it comes to retirement planning. So Brian Bass, one of the advisors from McLean Asset Management, stopped by to help Alex and I pull our noses out of our spreadsheets and talk about what's going on in the markets and how it's affecting everyone's retirement plans.
Welcome, everyone, to Retire with Style. I'm Alex, and I'm here with...
This is Bob French.
And I'm Brian Bass.
And we wanted to bring you this episode today. Have you noticed? Wade is not here today. This was an emergency podcast. Now, this was an episode we wanted to get out quickly because as we're recording this, the Fed had just raised rates, you know, the highest number since 1994. And we thought it'd be good to be a little current. And Wade just simply wasn't available today. It was kind of an audible that we called in terms of having this podcast. But you're in luck. We have Bob, who runs our runs the investments within McLean and retirement researcher, and we have Brian. And Brian, this is the first time we're bringing in an actual advisor to the show. He's one of the lead advisors at McLean Asset Management, and we wanted to bring him in because in previous episodes, Bob spoke about, you know, general market volatility, inflation. And we started talking about spending in retirement, which has a nice tie-in. But what hit us is that there are a lot – heck, we even had an episode on the behavioral side of things. That being the case, we realized people still have questions. And we thought, what better way to do that than to bring in Brian and just give us a generalized version of the reoccurring themes that he's hearing from clients in the thinking that if clients are asking us these questions over at McLean – well, invariably, the folks listening in will also have similar, like-minded questions. Okay, and so with that said, Brian, you want to take it away? Maybe give us a little bit about your backstory, what led you here, and what you do to make you qualified for this podcast.
Well, I definitely have big shoes to fill, so I'll do my best. Like you said, Alex, I'm one of the lead advisors of McLean. I've been with the firm about a year now. I was running my own shop as an independent for a while. I'm actually a career changer, so this is my second career, which kind of is the segue into how I got to McLean. Through my master's program at the American College, I actually studied underneath Wade, and one of the retiring advisors last year, COVID kind of got to him, and he decided he was going to walk away. So through some conversations with Wade, reached out, and kind of threw my hat into the ring here at McLean and fell in love with kind of the firm and the direction of everything and the way things are run. So I decided to pick up my shop and move over here to McLean. It's been one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. It's a phenomenal group of people and I couldn't ask to be in a better spot. Obviously the last 12 months haven't been fun with markets. It's been an interesting ride. With 2022 hasn't been off to the greatest start. And people do have questions, like you said. It's been across the spectrum of you know, pure fear to greed and joy that things are down so they can finally buy it, right? So it's been navigating those client conversations and really trying to get to understand the whys behind the questions. Why are people afraid? Why are they not okay with the things that are going on? And really, it for us, it goes back to the financial planning. We lean heavily on the planning. We know kind of where these people are. The ones that have gone through the RESA experience, it's become very, very apparent that the RESA is on point with all of this, because as you know, in bull markets, no one really gets to see if anything's right or wrong. It's just everyone's happy, it's great, everything's up, no one really cares. But it's when things hit the fan like they have this year that, you know, concerns and questions and behavioral stuff really starts to bubble to the surface. And so, yeah, it really has been a wide array of questions that we've gotten from clients.
Okay. Do you want to, and Bob, what you also interact with clients. You're not a direct advisor, but yeah. You know, we bring Bob in on those very special occasions. and as a reminder, Bob is he runs the show over at Retirement Researcher, which is our site where we put up a lot of publications. We have educational courses, we have a membership mm-hmm. site, etc. So Bob interacts, Brian interacts on a one-to-one approach, traditional wealth management. Bob is more a one-to-many approach, but he, you get bombarded with questions. Bob, are you
absolutely.
You have the same themes, if you will.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in fact, obviously there's a lot of stuff going on, and we just had a webinar on inflation where a lot of these topics were at least touched on. Based on just the general stuff that's happening. But, I think at a kind of more I'd say I'm seeing a lot of the same types of conversations that Brian was just alluding to there. And it's really going to break down based on, well, how are you approaching your retirement income? Someone who, has all but everything locked up in some annuity, they're probably not horribly worried. Someone who is relying on the markets to provide the vast majority of their retirement income, they are pretty worried, for good reason. They got a lot more of their retirement income at risk, intentionally at risk, but still at risk. It's going to be a different conversation depending on what your particular situation and what your particular inclination actually is. And hopefully Brian, those are lined up.
No, that's, you're right. And so, Brian, maybe you could just take us, we did high level. What specific, you have a client meeting, let's say later today. What will that look like based on a certain persona that you may have in mind for this client?
Sure. So a lot of it is led by our financial planning, right? So as we get into it, it's really, in my personal style, I've always led with retirement income. So it's always going back to the cash flows, looking at, basically building from the ground up. We have a couple base layers of guaranteed income through Social Security, and if there's any annuities present. And then you have to figure out a way to kind of fill the gap between that and the spend goal. So that's kind of where we start these conversations is, if the spend goal is healthy and there's not a huge, deviation from what's happened in markets in relation to what they're actually getting, it helps people kind of relax a little bit. Bob, to your point about the total return folk, those people tend to be the most scared in these mm-hmm. markets.
And just to interrupt, just from a jargon perspective, I'm as guilty as anyone. In case somebody's listening to this podcast for the first time since our numbers have been actually going up, there's a couple of strategies. Brian is referring to total return, and that's where you have an investment portfolio, and you're going to rely on taking sustainable withdrawals from that portfolio throughout retirement, and that'll be able to cover Social Security will cover some because that's already there, but it's effectively intended to cover your essential and discretionary. And so you're tethering yourself to the market performance. That's the total return sense. Sorry, Brian, I just wanted to make sure.
No, that's exactly right. From Social Security to the spend goal, there's nothing else to fill the gap there. So you are relying on the returns from stocks and bonds and whatever interest and dividends get thrown off from the portfolio to fill that gap. Obviously in that scenario, as markets are down 20, 30, whatever percent, it becomes an issue, right? So it's a different problem than the accumulator folks who are continuing to put money into these portfolios as they're down. That's a great place to be. But on the decumulation side, when we actually have to turn these portfolios into cash flows, that's where we create issues of permanent erosion of capital. As we continue to sell down the portfolio when markets are down, that obviously limits the amount of equity we have in the portfolio to rebound or to capitalize on the rebound when things do turn around. And so that's obviously, as Bob mentioned, the highest risk. And that's by design because it does have the highest upside. We fully believe in markets and we fully believe in the capability of equities to be the best long-term investment. And those portfolios will be driven, but we do have to be mindful of the spend down, as markets do continue to fall.
So, and trying to bring it down to a client level conversation. So I'm coming in, I'm in a total return approach. You're expecting to be scaled from 1 to 10, 10 being the most nervous, 1 being the least nervous, I'm a 7. You know, I come in at 7. I start asking you, should we get out? Should, you know, I'll leave it to you. But what is an actual conversation? I'm trying to kind of recreate, like, you know, more in the minutia what somebody will be asking you. And how do you answer that? In a manner that reflects the top-level stuff you just said.
That's exactly right. I mean, a lot of the lead questions are, what are we doing right now? Is it time to get out? Should we be in cash? How much cash do we have? You know, is it, when is this going to end? You know, obviously, we don't know the timing of the market, so we can't forecast what's going to happen today or tomorrow or the next day. But ultimately, you know, we need to reassure these people that things are going to be okay. And so the way we do that is we go back into the financial plan, and sometimes we do have to tweak the spend goals, right? So in a scenario where you do have a portfolio of stocks and bonds and nothing else to create income in there, you know, a lot of times the spend goal does need to get reduced to reflect the risks and the loss of, you know, paper capital at the time. And so we'll show them, like, hey, you know, if your spend goal was $200,000 last time we had a meeting, and now markets are off 20%, 30%, whatever the individual's, you know, securities have done, you know, that obviously is going to affect something. It's either going to affect the success rate of the plan, or it's going to affect the spend goal if we keep the success, you know, the success rate equal across the board. We have to adjust some of the inputs, right? And so we don't have as much capital in the portfolio. So we, you know, typically we'll adjust the spend goal and say, you know, now that this has happened, we're adjusting the financial plan. Here's your new spend goal. Does that still jive with what's actually going on?
That's good. Now, someone could be asking, I'm going to play the role of a client, if you will. If you said that to me, I'd be like, well, didn't we take a look at that at the beginning from a scenario standpoint? So it kind of feels like you're telling me now to change things up. And I thought we accounted for this drop to begin with.
Sure. No, that's a great point. And so through our modeling, using the Monte Carlo analysis, we do incorporate the downside risks to, you know, equities. And we'll show, you know, the initial expected return of a portfolio. And we'll also show the standard deviation, which is the risk, right? So the kind of the ups and the downs that we expect from a portfolio. And we do model those things in. The one rebuttal there is, you know, if you would like to keep everything consistent, I can show you kind of what the output looks like. It might not be in the same comfort level or range as we had initially because the portfolio values are down. But if you are comfortable with, you know, looking at a plan that may or may not be in the same green zone, if you will, then that's great. If you want to continue on down the road, that's great. You know, our original modeling is. You know, something we do lean on and we do account for these things. But at the time, when we look at the point in time of what the success rate of the plan is, it might not be the most comfortable thing to see.
Yeah, I mean, the issue that a lot of people have with Monte Carlo analysis is that it is probabilistic. It does account for these negative type events. It does account for the really positive type events. And when you run a Monte Carlo type of plan, you know, what you're really looking at is what's the spectrum of outcomes that we could achieve. And within that spectrum, where are we kind of most likely to end up? And then we plan from there. And the thing about Monte Carlo analysis is it's not something that ever stays still. It's something that needs to be kind of continually adjusted as we get new information. Because, you know, a lot of Monte Carlo plans, they run 1,000 simulations. Well, we don't have 1,000 lifetimes. You know, we have one lifetime. And, you know, as we progress through time, as we see an event like we've just been seeing, hopefully it's past tense, you know, we kind of collapse that probability function down to that single path. And, you know, this single path we're seeing right now, as of right now, you know, in the short term hasn't been that great. So the plan kind of shifts down a little bit. That doesn't mean that it's useless. That doesn't mean that it's a bad tool. It just means that it's a tool that you need to work with. Just like any other tool out there, any other type of analysis, as things change, it brings new information that we can then apply to your situation. So as we run it, you know, if the markets have been down significantly, well, unfortunately, you have less money to work with to meet up with those goals. So things might need to change. Now, if we were to let it run, you know, yeah, we probably, because these types of things are in the simulation, there's a decent chance we'd get back there. but it's going to be a little bit tighter than we would have wanted otherwise. So we want to kind of continue evaluating. We want to kind of continue making sure that we're still moving along a path that we're comfortable with.
I get that, Brian. Sorry, Bob, but I kind of want to, I don't want to make this into like the Monte Carlo episode.
Absolutely.
So I'm actually more interested in what visceral questions clients are asking and how, you know, because I think a lot of listeners are in that position and they may not all have advisors. They may not all have a sounding board. And so as much as we can make this kind of sounding board for them, I think there'll be a lot of value in the episode. And so simply put, Brian, have you had to walk somebody off the ledge over the last few weeks, you know, from a portfolio standpoint, obviously?
Yeah,
and
no, absolutely.
What helped you turn it around?
It's funny that there's been a lot of conversation too around the I-bonds, right? It's hey, how many different ways can I structure my estate so that I can buy the most I-bonds possible? And ultimately, those are the people that are scared of the equity markets, right? They're looking to get out and go buy something that's, you know, quote unquote safe. And so just having those conversations of really looking at things from a long-term perspective, more so than looking at things in the immediate term, right? I-bonds are fantastic. You know, right now they're paying out, whatever it is, 8.5%, 9%. But ultimately that gets reset every 6 months. You know, if we're, you know.
And there's a limit.
Right. So it's $10,000 per registration, right? So it's not like you can dump a ton of money, but there are a lot of creative people out there that are trying to figure out ways to.
Don't forget the $5,000 with the tax refund that you can stick on there too.
Right, exactly. So there are a lot of creative people that are trying to figure out ways to get more I-bonds, right? So, but ultimately it's, you know, Bob did a great presentation on inflation expectations and what the market is pricing in for inflation. And if you really think about what's happening over time, as we trend down toward that 2.5 to 3% inflation rate, you know, those I-bonds are not as attractive as investment as stocks are. And so when you help people kind of step out of the here and now and really take a deep breath and relax and look at things from a 20, 30, 40 year point of view, it really becomes obvious that, okay, that, you know, we have to accept some level of volatility in order to capture the upside of the markets. I mean, that's just the way it works. You know, the more upside we expect to get, the more risk we have to take on to get that upside. And so it's just step back off the ledge, realize that things are going to happen. These are normal market events. We're not, you know, at a 30, 40, 50, 60% down. These are normal market functions.
Let's take a moment to let the audience know that this show is sponsored by Retirement Researcher. You can learn more about Retirement Researcher at retirementresearcher.com and subscribe to our newsletter, where you'll receive weekly actionable information for your retirement planning benefit. Retirement Researcher is an online community devoted to helping you create the retirement income plan geared towards your goals.
So what's causing the anxiety of the clients then? When they come
It's not comfortable. It's not comfortable to see your, you know, in dollar terms, you're down $1 million or $2 million. You know, your portfolio is 10 or 15% down. It, you know, 10 or 15% is not an emotional number, but when you see the actual dollar value of I lost $1 million, I lost $2 million, I lost $3 million in my portfolio over the last 3 months, that's a very uncomfortable conversation to have. And so it really is. It's trying to help people understand that, you know, it's only a loss if you sell. It's not a loss if you hold the equities and they do rebound and things come back. And, you know, again, that's kind of the long-term view of it is get out of the here and now, turn the TV off. There's, you know, 1,000 fear mongers out there beating the table that this is the end of the world and things are going to collapse. And, you know, history has told us we've been through, well, you know, many, many worse things than this, and we've come out the other side okay.
And you find that helps?
It does. And there's a great, you know, set of charts that we use to kind of show, you know, the terrible events over time and what equity markets did and how far they went down, and then kind of the trend line of what happened after that. You know, equity markets are forward looking. So
I know with this, though, I would think, because there's an emotional component to this, and there's all these biases that run the gamut, right? Although there's just I categorize them as general noise, though, to be honest. But that being the case, how would you say recency plays into this? And that's where you take what's happening now and you extrapolate that into the future, because our clients at McLean are fairly high-level folks in terms of professionals, graduate professionals, et cetera. And so they can read a graph, they can see a bar chart and say, oh yeah, okay, I get it. But still, there's that piece, I think, where too smart for their own good is the wrong way of saying it, but I'm saying it anyways. They see the chart, but this time it's different kind of vibe. This is not the same. They get into the politics of it, depending on, you know, four conservatives or four liberals. It's almost like you can find the counter all the time to those. Do you see a lot of that happening where they put the numbers aside, the Monte Carlo aside, the allocation to international REITs because it's a diversifier, that kind of stuff? They put that aside and they're just like, I just feel queasy right now about this and I want out.
There are. And to your point, I mean, the political side of it, there is a lot of questions coming in about, you know, the current administration, what's going to happen in November, what happens in the next election, and all those kind of things are all playing into the calculus of the here and now, right? I mean, to your point, we have a lot of really, really smart people that dive into the numbers and do their own calculations, and on, you know, they come to us with a plan that kind of they want to execute and bounce it off of us, and that's kind of how it goes. But I mean, it dealing with the emotional side of it is not the easy part, right? That's the hard part of our job. Right, the numbers are the numbers. You know, that's Bob's famous quote, the numbers are the numbers, right? There's only so many ways you can kind of dissect the math and do the math. It's the emotional side of it. It's the emotions of really looking at these accounts and looking at your net worth that has gone down significantly. And then, you know, where do we go from here kind of thing? You know, and a lot of that too, as we've had these conversations, as we've continued to kind of parse out the different types of clients that we have and the different ways people are reacting to this, it really kind of plays back into the work you've done on the RESA. It's been amazing.
Tell me more.
it's amazing the clients that have taken the RESA and we have the data on them, we kind of know what to expect in these conversations. And as they continue to talk and as they, you know, present their feelings and their thoughts to us, that it's amazing how they've dialed into the same quadrant of the RESA that came out of the output. So, you know, kudos to you for creating an amazing test that has, you know, it's now being tested under fire. And I mean, it's amazing to see these people just fall right into the boxes that they fell into in the RESA.
Now, what's interesting, you came to us within the last year, and this is a project Wade and I have been working on for 2 years. And mm-hmm. granted, before then, we were the traditional AUM advisory firm, where kind of we were mentally restricting ourselves to a total return approach. And if somebody wanted an annuity or whatever, we wouldn't do it. We'd just hand it off to somebody. How have you felt as you've been doing the whole client list? And it's not like from one day to the next we can see every client, so we've been rotating through them. Have you needed to change? There's two things. There's, I want out of the market. Okay, let me get you out of the market so you can sleep at night, even though we don't recommend it, which doesn't really happen to us. But let's just say there's that level. And then there's the, hey, you know what? There's a better strategy out there that fits my needs. Why don't we begin to pursue something like that? Can you talk us through that dynamic? I assume it happens.
It has. It's happened quite a bit. Going back to my own personal style of being an advisor, I lead with income planning. Like, that's for me, that's the most important part of retirement planning, is how do we create this income? How do we do this so that we can sit and put our heads down at the pillow in times like this and not completely freak out and do the wrong thing at the wrong time? So we've had conversations with people who, you know, fortunately for them, they were approaching retirement and not completely deep into retirement. But we've had those conversations where we kind
of flip. You can remove the names, obviously, but can you actually hey, this person walked in, a husband, wife, blah, blah, blah?
The one couple I'm thinking of came in and, you know, they were very unsure of the bonds, right? They didn't like bonds. They didn't like where we were going. They had a very negative outlook on bonds. They had never really been talked to about income planning itself. So they didn't quite understand, you know, how to generate retirement income from their portfolio. You know, they had a big equity position, they had a big bond position. And so we kind of framed it as, you know,
mutual fund bonds or individual bonds?
These were mutual fund bonds. So there wasn't really an opportunity to kind of segment that out and use those for income. So we flipped it around and we flipped the conversation from, you know, we're going to pull 4% out of this portfolio forever, here's what that, you know, what that looks like, into, you know, hey, look, if we add a component of guaranteed income by using some of these bonds, you know, let's say just you pick a number, we use 20% of the portfolio, the bond portfolio, it was a 60-40 portfolio, we took 20% or half of the bonds, 20% of the total portfolio, dropped into annuity, and we showed them exactly what that looks like from both a risk and reward perspective, And also from the income side, you know, we, again, we stacked it on top of the Social Security, and we ended up, you know, basically guaranteeing about, I want to say it was like 80% of their spend goal. And then they're going, okay, well, we have all this money left. Like, what do we do with this? I'm like, well, that's great. So we can either do one or two things. We can create more income for you where you can, you know, take your lifestyle up if you'd like. You know, if that's something you're interested in doing, if you want to do more trips, more things, that's awesome. We can do that because we have so much more capacity. Or we can start estate planning and looking at, you know, what are we going to do with these assets for the next generation? And how do we now start to efficiently transfer those? So it opened up a whole wide array of conversations that were not about, you know, what was my return this year? It turned into now, you know, we're looking at the entire comprehensive plan in a completely different way.
And this is in light of the current volatility.
Correct.
And rightly or wrongly, how many times you get pushed back? Because we view ourselves as wealth manager, right? And that means it's a holistic approach. But I sense these are also buzzwords that are used within the industry. You know, like over time, if everyone's using it, you got to come up with a new term, right? And we're kind of at that balance right now. But how many folks come up to you, clients maybe not so much, prospects maybe a little bit more, that are like, well, what do I have you for if you can't tell me what's going to happen to the market? Is that a conversation that you're still seeing?
Definitely not from clients, but for sure. And as you meet people and as new people come to you and are curious about what you do, it's definitely, you know, well, my guy at Morgan Stanley or my guy at Goldman Sachs, or it's always kind of, well, you know, their returns are XYZ. What are yours? You know, and just to kind of to push back on those conversations and like, look, you know, investments are, you know, to Bob's point, the numbers are the numbers, right? If you build the portfolio right, you can kind of generate the returns, you know, plus or minus whatever that is at any shop. So it really is getting the planning right. It's planning focused. It's, you know, I like the car analogy. It's if you don't know where you're going, how do you choose the right car? Right. So you first build the plan, you build the road, you build your roadmap, and then you figure out what kind of car you need. And then you drop the engine into the car, and now you're going down the road in the right direction with the right vehicles. So, you know, it's all the ancillary things that go on around the financial plan that really matter. If you build the portfolio right and you choose the right engine, and it gets you into a point where you can put your head down on the pillow at night and sleep comfortably, you know, that's ultimately what's important, more so than trying to find the best manager to drive the best returns out there.
I think that's good. And you keep referencing this Bob Uecker?
Bob Uecker. Yep.
Is that who? Okay. The numbers are the numbers. I don't know about attributing that phrase to Bob. I mean,
I'm starting to get a little uncomfortable. I definitely was not the one who started that one. So
we got to get him a t-shirt on the back of his t-shirt. The numbers are the numbers.
Exactly.
All right. No, that's good. Bob, you want to add, because you're in on a lot of client meetings as well.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, getting back and really focusing in on those folks, whether they're officially total return or not, but those folks who do have a good slug of their money in the stock market or really just the financial markets, the risky part of the financial markets. You know, I think there's obviously a lot going on here. And Brian, you know, this is obviously always a great way for those who are inclined towards more of that reliable income, whether it's through an annuity or building a bond ladder, this can be, you know, a kick in the pants to kind of take a harder look at that. But, you know, even for those folks who are going to be staying, you know, oriented towards the financial markets, you know, this is also, and I'm always nervous when I go down this road, but you know, we're always learning more and more about what our risk tolerance actually is. You know, we change through time. You know, the numbers, you know, even just aging.
The numbers are the numbers.
I caught myself, but you wouldn't let me go with it. You know, the research shows just aging. As we get older, we get much more loss averse. We want much more kind of conservative portfolios bringing into the investment context. But you know, even aside from that, you know, we just change through time. You're not the same person you were 10 years ago. You're not the same person you were in college or high school or whatever time period you want to talk about. And we're constantly getting new information. So how you reacted to, you know, 2020, how you reacted to what's going on right now, that's important information to bring into the context of what your portfolio should look like. Now, the reason I get really nervous talking about this is what Alex brought up earlier, recency bias. You know, if you are someone who, you know, maybe you're a little bit more aggressive than you probably should be, when we're going through a period like right now, you're going to want to pull way back because this is wildly uncomfortable. Well, in reality, you should be pulling back potentially a little bit. You know, on the flip side, when things are going really, really well, and we've definitely seen this in the moderately recent past, you know, people start thinking that they feel really, really great with these good returns. You know, so they kind of let their portfolio drift up a little bit. You know, and that obviously leads to periods like right now when we kind of get some in the butt a little bit right now. But it's definitely something to be paying attention to. It's definitely something to be thinking about. You just need to be really, really careful when you start thinking through those. And, you know, Brian, I'm curious if you've had any conversations along those lines with some of your clients.
Or actually, let me, if you don't mind, just because we're hitting on the half hour, and I don't want to discuss the, you know, these clients. So why don't we break this up into two? Is that all right?
That's great.
Sure.
All right. All right, folks. We have a great cliffhanger. Thanks to Bob. But thank you for listening to this episode, and we'll catch you on the next one. All righty. Thank you.
Wade and Alex are both principals in McLean Asset Management and retirement researcher. Both are SEC-registered investment advisors located in Tysons, Virginia. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational and educational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific securities. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor. All investing comes with a risk, including risk of loss. Past performance does not guarantee future results.